What's going on, Sky Town? Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. My name is James Kay, and with me on the mic right now is Chris Pennant. Mr. Pennant, how are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling good, man. We are back. We are back once again because the WNBA season restart is already here. Yesterday with the Commissioner's Cup final. I'm excited to talk about that. There's so much going on, and there's so much going on with our team, the prospective champion Chicago Sky. So, I know, right? I'm feeling it. It's been a while, and we're back, so I'm feeling it.
Hey, we got 2 days before the Chicago Sky get to restart their season. But before we get into that, we do have some exciting news to share with you all. We are actually partnering with TickPick the rest of the season, and we have some things in the work right now so that you all, the great people of the Skyhook Podcast, have a chance to win some free tickets to a Sky game this season. So just make sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any of those future opportunities to go back to Wintrust, man. I've been dying to go back to Wintrust for a while. Chris and I will be at the Sky Wings game. I believe they're facing the Wings on the 17th. So we just want to give a quick shout out to TickPick for reaching out to us about this. And we will have more information about that soon, about how you guys can enter to win some free tickets. So huge shout out to them. But Chris, we have some catching up to do because we have been so busy with just a million different things that we haven't been able to touch on some of the topics in Skytown that happened over the Olympic break. So let's just roll through some of them. Let's just go kind of fast. We want to do some like second half predictions at the end of this. So make sure to also just check out the description in the episode if you kind of just want to, you know, get just to go directly to what we're thinking about in the second half of the season, or I should say the second portion. We only have 12 games left. It's insane. But let's just start off with the Commissioner's Cup that happened last night. The Seattle Storm just overwhelmed the Connecticut Sun. They beat them 79-57. They had a third quarter where they outscored the Sun 22-5. Not the way you want to start off the restart if you're the Sun, but we're not really going to be talking too much about the actual game itself. I didn't actually watch it because my girlfriend guilted me into going to her friend's dinner party. But I do have you hear that, Maggie? I'm going to hear an earful about that one later. But I do have some thoughts about how the W can kind of make it more clear on how this format works. Chris, am I alone when I say that I did not understand the Commissioner's Cup format heading into the season, because it just felt like it was all over the place?
Well, I think you have to figure out a way to integrate something like this into the regular season, especially one that was so hectic as this one with the rescheduled Olympics and finishing up the Eurobasket season. So the dream of putting in, you know, adding a few extra games onto the season was curtailed somewhat. When you think about regular season games that lead to a trophy at the end of the season, my first thought is association football in England with the League Cup and the FA Cup, or the Europa League and Champions League in UEFA football as well, and even like the MLS Cup. With those, you have those games outside of the regular season, partially because you're playing teams at a different level. So imagine if the Sky played a semi-pro women's team, like the St. Louis, the team, I can't think of the team in St. Louis, but they're solid. They've had a few collegians go there. So with this, there wasn't really a way to put those games outside the schedule. I think something like that would help if they could ever do it, but it's, When your team's playing intramural, there's not really a way to separate the games from the regular season schedule. So I did understand the format. I think that they would have to take the success of this year, however minor it might have been, and build off of that so that in the future, these Commissioner's Cup games are looked to with some more fervor. Mm-hmm. you have to build something in, add an element of drama that basically makes the conferences matter again, because right now there's rivalries, right? But some of them they're not necessarily conference rivalries or division rivalries, because they're still conferences, but they don't necessarily matter except for the purposes now of this Commissioner's Cup. So you have to have some kind of reason for teams to get up for the individual games, even though there's money on the line and it's a substantial amount of money. So I will say that I understood the format. I thought that it's, you know, it's a trial run. So there were going to be things that worked and things that didn't work. But I think overall it worked. It's just, it's hard for the viewing public to really focus on, like, oh, this is a Commissioner's Cup game, because they haven't seen the logo, they haven't seen this trophy before. And so it's just kind of like, oh, well, I guess this means a little bit more, but there's nothing that they have in their memories to really register that. So I think in the future, as long as they keep it going and keep building the suspense and marketing it well, then it'll be more significant in the future.
That's a really important point, that this was the first year that the WNBA was going to try out this format. And I've seen a lot of people on Twitter specifically saying that the WNBA should scrap this. I think that's a real mistake, just saying that everybody was confused during the regular season about how this was working and that it wasn't promoted in the right way. Well, guess what? The WNBA has an entire offseason now to think about how they can improve this event. I mean, this is something that can be improved. Just if they have an entire division right now dedicated to entertainment and making sure, like, okay, how can we make X better? I think they're going to look at the Commissioner's Cup, that now that there's somewhat of a familiarity with it, that they can go ahead and make some adjustments. I've been flirting with the idea, though, that instead of just having, I think how it works is that there's 10 Commissioner's Cup games per team, and that whoever has the best record by the end of it gets to play in the Commissioner's Cup. A part of me wonders that if they should just scrap that potentially. And I hear what you're saying about the conferences, because I do think that's actually kind of a big deal that people aren't talking enough about. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting that, because this is going to be coming right out of the All-Star break, there could be an opportunity here to just have the two top teams in the standings could play for the Commissioner's Cup. And that's just a finals preview that could get us hyped up for the rest of the way. And the season starts maybe just like it is set up right now, like three days after the Commissioner's Cup. I think there's an opportunity there potentially where that also gives teams a reason not to tank. When you put 50 or what was it, 500K on the line. I mean, I don't know, if I was a player, there's a financial incentive with this. I think that there's something to be said about that potentially, where you can force some of these teams not to, like, who are not going for it, to go for it. But maybe that's just thinking way ahead, like way too far. And I think about if there is expansion coming up soon where the Commissioner's Cup might actually be more interesting if there's more teams involved rather than just 12 teams, and that there's a little bit more nuance involved with it. So I hear you there. But yeah, I mean, I think that this is a idea that has like a lot of potential, and that the people that are like kind of overreacting right now saying that like this didn't work, I was confused, and that we should just scrap it, I think that's a poor decision.
I agree with that. There's a lot of knee-jerk reactions in sports now because information comes at you so fast. There's all these ways to react instantly, and there's not an emphasis placed on thoughtful opinions. And if anybody feels like I'm taking aim at them, I'm not. But if you feel guilty, don't worry, I've done it too. There's no reason to take something like this and throw it in the garbage the first time it's gone around just because the game was a little lopsided. True, the storm came out and smoked Connecticut unexpectedly. Anytime you have a 22-5 quarter, anytime you score 5 points in a quarter, it's unexpected, no matter how good each team is. But I think that this game has a lot of potential. Firstly, and foremostly, because that $30,000 per player is nearly a half of some of those players' salaries. And that's what I kept seeing. That's what we all know. This is big money on the line for people. That $30,000 is half my yearly salary. And to say that me is making a comparable salary to a professional basketball player is ludicrous. To say that I'm making as much money or near as much money as them is Chris Bridges. It's ludicrous. So you have that. There's a commitment that the league is showing that their partners and that the advertising firms, the NBA even, they're showing to their players, to their personnel, that they're committed to paying them what they're worth, giving them their value. And the only thing that I disagree with you on, James, because I do like that idea of having those top two teams play, is that kind of similar to those competitions I mentioned before, with the Commissioner's Cup format, and especially if there is expansion, which I'd love to see in the next couple of years, you have the potential for quote-unquote giant killings where a team like, say, the Fever could have had a terrible record, but say they win four of their first six Commissioner's Cup games, then they're in line to get to that Commissioner's Cup final. Even if they have no shot at making the playoffs, if they have a halfway decent start to the season, or if they just take advantage of the matchups presented to them, then you've got some players who have $30,000 on the line. And, you know, what else do those players and those teams have to shoot for in the midst of a season that's not going to lead to the postseason, not going to lead to a deep playoff run, not going to lead to the WNBA finals? Mm-hmm. You know, then they have a shot to play in a nationally televised game with something on the line. So I think that everybody who's talking mess about this being like a failure, it's the first time through. Like, this isn't the USFL. This isn't anybody trying to foray into Russia in a war setting. This isn't a failure off the bat. So y'all got to calm down.
Chris, you lost me at Indiana Fever.
I'm sorry, man.
I'm just joking. No, you're totally right about all of that, though. I mean, a Seattle Storm, I mean, actually, it would have been kind of cool to see the Aces and Storm go off, you know, go against each other again. But you're right. I mean, it would be cool to see a team like the Dallas Wings, who had the best offensive rating in the WNBA in the last nine games before the Olympic break, to go up against a team like, go up against the Storm. Maybe something, I mean, I think their front court would be torn apart, but at the same time, who knows? Maybe they could catch fire from beyond the arc and they win the Commissioner's Cup. I mean, I think that's a really valid point, but let's keep moving along here. One of the things that was super exciting a few weeks ago, it was announced that Candace Parker will become the first WNBA player to be on the cover of NBA 2K. I literally did an air fist pump when I saw this news. It was, I loved it. I'm so happy that CP or a WNBA player finally gets some visibility here. Chris, just like in your mind, like how important was this finally coming to fruition? Because it felt like, after last year when the WNBA was finally featured in the game, that this was kind of on the horizon.
I mean, there were innumerable chances to do this, right? Especially early on in the life of 2K when it started out. The WNBA was still probably on the end of its first wave of popularity when that first came out. But this is incredibly important. I mean, Candace Parker is well-known as a ball player. She's a ball player's ball player, as cliche as that might sound. She's respected by athletes in the country, outside the country, for what she's done, what she can do, who she is. She's on the NBA on TNT, so people know her who were even casual basketball fans. After she roasted Shaq multiple times, people who aren't even casual basketball fans, just because of the way that our world news is set up now, people saw that on Twitter or Instagram and they're like, oh, yo, that was crazy. And so people have gotten to know Candace through so many different channels that putting her on the cover is a natural move. I think that now that this has happened, this is something that rightfully, even though it's behind the times, it opens the door for other athletes who have been getting notoriety recently to get on the cover of 2K to get on the cover of these games, because, you know, it's, you'll see different covers around the world, right? There'll be a Luka Doncic cover for the European version, I believe. Things like that are going to happen because you want to appeal to a different target audience.
And that
in itself is what the important thing is. There's going to be other basketball players on the cover of this edition of 2K, but young people, young women are going to see Candace Parker. Young black women are going to see Candace Parker on the cover of this game. People who buy it are just like, yo, who's that? They might buy it. This might be their first game for some reason, right? Or they might be playing with whomever, like how we always did. If you had a cousin, older sibling, an older best friend, or somebody who you played games with, you went over to their house to play games or something like that. You're like, yo, who is that? Oh, that's Candace Parker. Let me tell you about her. Yo, I want to play with her on the game. And there you go. There you go. That's all you need. So it's a seminal moment.
The representation is so important, like you just talked about. Just seeing someone that represents you in some way gives you that extra motivation. I mean, I remember growing up playing baseball. I was like the skinny kid. This was pre-beer consumption. And I would play MVP baseball 2005 a lot. When I wasn't practicing baseball, I was playing that game. And I had a coach once told me, if you're going to pitch, you got to gain some muscle. You got to work on that part because you're just not going to be able to get to play high school ball if you don't do that. And yeah. Which is wild to say that to a fifth grader. That crushed me initially, but I remember like playing that game, like MVP baseball 2005, and 165 pound Pedro Martinez was one of the pitchers in that game throwing 97. I remember just being like, you know what? If that guy can do it, like he's so skinny, he's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Like, why can't I do it? You know? And I kind of kept that with me a little bit. I mean, I ended up making the varsity baseball team in high school, and I actually had that coach. He talked to me and being like, I'm sorry I said that when you were younger. I'm like, thank you. But I also think about like, if I didn't have that video game, I wonder if I actually would have continued to play baseball because I was this insecure little kid. And I just think that, like, again, you have those heroes to look up to, whether that's virtual or like you see kids just being having the WNBA be more visible and accessible to them. It's such an important thing to have growing up. And one more thing before we move on to the next thing too. One of the cool things about this is that Candace is the eighth Chicago athlete to be on the cover of a video game. And by that, I mean like players that play on a Chicago sports team, not like Anthony Davis was on the cover of NBA 2K, I think like either last year or 2 years ago. I know he's from the area, but he was in a Lakers uniform. That doesn't count. So the list goes, though. The list for that. So Michael Jordan was on it twice on NBA 2K in 2011 and 2016. Derrick Rose in 2012. Patrick Kane was on NHL 10. Jonathan Toews was also on it twice in NHL 11 and NHL 16. And Javi Baez in MLB The Show in 2020. And now Candace on this new edition of 2K. That is a really cool list to be a part of. And to represent Chicago like that, I think is another aspect of this that I think that people weren't talking about as much, to have someone, a Chicago athlete on one of these covers. I just think is so cool that the city is represented too, especially when the uniforms are like, they have like the different uniforms now. So I think it's not the Rebel edition, it's the Explorer edition that's on the cover of 2K. I just love that. You know, just the city was just represented well on that cover. And I can't think of another athlete better to do that than Candace Parker. So, you know, Chris, do you want to talk about Space Jam real fast before we get to the second half? Because we actually tried to record an episode about CP and Space Jam, and right as we like 10 minutes in, my Wi-Fi went haywire on me, and we didn't get a chance to record that. So do you have any Space Jam thoughts before we get to the second half?
Yeah, look at my 30 seconds or so on it. I thought the movie was surprisingly good for what it was. LeBron is best when he's playing a version of himself. And so this was not as good as Trainwreck, but it was pretty good. I thought the plot was decent with the video game ideal and his movie son building the video game coding. That was actually kind of cool and important. Speaking of representation mattering, yeah. Seeing a young black kid coding and building his own video game seems wild to me, but it's something you can do now. The having Diana Taurasi and Nneka Ogunwike in the movie the way that they did, I think they shortchanged them and the other players that they had in, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, Anthony Davis, with regard to the first movie, because we had that whole comedy angle the first time with the players getting their power stolen and trying to figure out what was going on and how to get them back. And so remember, like the first Space Jam, this is way over 30 seconds, the first Space Jam wasn't just Michael Jordan in a Looney Tune world trying to get the team together. It was also Charles Barkley going to that court playing with those girls and them like roasting him and being like, be out, wannabe. And all those guys going to the psychiatrist and getting all those tests. So that was an important side plot that you didn't really get this movie. It was constant Braun and the Looney Tunes with a slice, with a, like a dash of Don Cheadle kind of, Svengali-ing his son into playing against him. So you only got a little bit of screen time for the actual players, and then you had their video game henchmen versions for the rest of the film. So I think you lost out there. But otherwise, it was surprisingly good. And I know some kids, my softball team's kids, they enjoyed the movie. So it accomplished its purpose.
You pretty much summed up how I felt about the movie. All I'm going to say, Diamond to Shield should have been in this movie. That's how I
feel.
You're
right.
I want that personality. I agree. But the biggest thing was I kind of felt like they shortchanged the WNBA players and Dame and AD. But Chris, let's move to this, like move. Let's just look forward, honestly. Let's look forward to the second half of the WNBA season. There are 12 games left. One of the things that we wanted to talk about is where we thought the Sky would finish in the standings heading into the playoffs. Where do you see this team? You know, what's the last game is on September 19th against the Fever. Where do you see the Sky ending up in the standings before playoff time?
I think it's still the difficulty that it's been with them getting back. They have to beat good teams. And they're going to be facing some good teams right out of the chute with Seattle and then Dallas and then the Lynx, who have started to figure things out. And then they go to Atlanta near the end of the month and then have Seattle after a couple, 3 days. So there's not really that many cakewalks on the schedule, if any. They've still got two with the Aces, then the Mystics, who are finally getting Elena Deladon back, and then finish out the season against the Fever. So the Fever, the last game of the season, is pretty much the only gimme game. Yeah. And they're 500 now with 12 games to go. It's hard for me to go against a 6-6 finish, but we haven't seen them for so long. I think that's the other caveat. It's kind of like the beginning of the season for me. I need to see how they work. So I know that everybody is like, boo, why are you just caving? But I think 500 is about what I would expect. Maybe they get a couple of wins off of Minnesota and move that to 8-4, which would be great. Their measuring stick is still the Lynx for me.
Yep.
So I'll go with that. I'll say 18-12. To finish the season, winning eight of these 12 games, but they're really going to have to grind on a few of them.
So where do you see them? Do you see them fifth in the standings then?
I'm going to go with that only because I'm not looking at the other team's schedules. You figure that Las Vegas and Seattle will stay right where they are in the standings.
We should cement those. I think there's no way that Seattle and the Aces, unless, hey, One thing that we could look out for is the Sky just go on a tear, and they, again, they 50% of their games are against Aces, against the Aces and Storm. They play those teams three times each. So maybe they leave a dent at the top of the standings. I actually wrote about this for Winsider that should be coming out either tomorrow or the day after, that they actually could make some headway in the standings because, again, they haven't faced the two top teams yet. I do think they finish fifth, though. Just looking at the schedule,
I mean, the one thing that is nice, and this is only on the surface, they're allowing the fourth fewest points per game so far in the season. And just based on the points they've scored, the points they've allowed, they've actually left two wins on the table with Pythagorean wins. Funny thing is, we know which games those are because one of them was a half court, one of them was a buzzer beater, and another one was probably that Atlanta Dream game that got away from them late. So they could, by for all intents and purposes, be 12-8, and that would put them above the Lynx in the standings. I'll go and I'll say they finish fourth because it's such a cutthroat list after those top two teams, with them and Minnesota, even Connecticut with a really good record, and then Phoenix and New York and Washington. Who knows what's going to happen with Washington now that they've got their big guns back?
The thing that I worry about, I actually think that. I think the Lynx are going to either finish fourth or better. I think there's a tiny, tiny chance that they actually surpass the Sun for the third seed. Because if you just look at the schedule, they have two matchups against the Sun. And I know that the Sun have like a relatively easy schedule. I think they play the Sparks like three times, which is going to be a cakewalk for that team, honestly. There's so much momentum going in Minnesota's way right now that I have a really hard time seeing them dropping at all. I mean, they have not just that they were looking fantastic before the Olympic break, but that they're about to get Natalie Achonwa back. They might get Ariel Powers into the mix. And when you consider that they have, their bench is scoring the ninth most points coming off of the bench per game this season, that they're about to get those two pieces back. And now you give Cheryl Reeve a couple of pieces that she can mess around with, where she can experiment with some lineups. Steven Trinkwald tweeted at me after I posted that bench point stat the other day. And he was like, do you see Natalie Achonwa working her way back into that lineup and trying to have a more conventional lineup where the Lynx play a little bit bigger than just having Demiris in the lineup? And I think that they're not going to do that. I actually think that they're going to keep that bench bolstered, having Natalie Achonwa back, having her revitalize that second unit. Crystal Dangerfield's injury couldn't have come at a better time. Her shoulder injury that she sustained against the Aces in the second to last game before the Olympic break is apparently healed. And she feels, so she's looking okay, apparently. I just have a hard time seeing the Lynx dropping in the standings right now. And I also don't see a team like the Liberty also surging back up through the standings and overtaking the Sky either, even though the Sky schedule, like you talked about, is going to be really difficult. And even the Wings, I know the Wings aren't looking good right now. And they, again, they're all offense. Like I mentioned before, that they had the best offensive rating in the WNBA in the last nine games before the Olympic break. They've already beat the Sky once this season in a nail biter that came down to like an 8-0 run by the Wings at the end, I believe it was. I worry about that team if you catch them the wrong night, that they're going to be the ones that can snake bite you a little bit there. And that's something that I'm a little bit worried about for this team. But at the same time, for my friend, the Sky Show Shy, who's one of the most positive people out there. If you just look on the other side of the coin, truly, if you look on the other side of the coin, this team has a chance to really fuck up the top of the standings here with the Aces and Storm. I don't like the Storm. Like, again, you have Brianna Stewart and Jewel Lloyd, who are probably the most dynamic duo in the WNBA right now. Sorry to Asia and Liz, who have the best high-low game, obviously. But at the same time, when you look at those two players that Seattle has right now, outside of them, I'm not that confident. And when you look at the Sky, who just had one of the deepest benches in the WNBA, I just have a hard time. I mean, I think there's a possibility that the Sky are able to take a couple of these games against the Storm. I don't know how they're going to fare against the Aces. I think that backcourt is going to be the backcourt coming off of the bench could potentially get eaten alive by Kelsey Plum and Derek Hamby, who both come off the bench at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's going to work for the Sky, just given how, you know, Lexi Brown and Dana Evans are still trying to figure things out there. And again, Dana Evans has looked great at times, and there are times been out. Same thing for Lexi Brown, but Kelsey Plum and Derek Hamby coming off of the bench, and Kelsey Plum providing that spark, leading the WNBA with 13.5 bench points per game. I'm a little bit nervous about that one. So I do see them in fifth. That was such a long answer, but I do see them coming in, ending the season fifth. How about like what the Sky can improve on just heading into this final stretch as well? I mean, is there anything that we talked a little bit with Rachel and Annie about this a tiny bit, but is there anything that you think the Sky need to improve on heading into this pivotal 12 game stretch?
Finishing. There were too many games that they didn't finish. I know that seems that might seem broad, but that's what you got to do. You got to finish.
One quick interruption. You're 100% right. James Wade said that he looked back at the tape. This was yesterday at a press conference where he said that he looked back at how the Sky weren't finishing in the fourth quarter, and that was something he talked about with the team. So don't mean to interrupt, but you're 100% right when you say that.
No, I appreciate it. I'm glad too, because it's been so long we've been out. And teams have had a chance to work on. Well, no, let me back up. Mm-hmm. We were out for the Olympics, so the coaching staff had a chance to look at a lot. The individual players were playing for if they were in the Olympics, and if not, they were might have been working on some individual things. But the Sky just need to finish. I can't put any finer of a point on it than that. They lost that game against Phoenix. To that key in their shot because they couldn't keep the pressure on. They lost those close games where teams came back, but for the same reason. So when you have a lead in the fourth quarter, you can't revert to being that good but not great Sky team of years past and let teams back into games. They've got to finish. Just because you played in close games and know how they are doesn't mean you should have it a lot when you're trying to reach that upper echelon. So they've got to put their foot on the throat of these teams when the game is on the line and turn those 5-point leads into 10 rather than having them dwindle to nothing.
You're 100% right. That is something that has been glaring, not even just from this season, but from previous seasons as well. And kind of, I don't know, I think one of the biggest things that they really need to focus on too is just getting back to the free throw line as frequently as they did in the first half of the season. The first like 12 games of the season, because when just in their last six games of the season, they were only getting to the line 12 times a game, which was last in the league in that span. They just need to be more aggressive. You know, I think that Diamond, again, she has been someone that has really settled into her role with this team. Finally, I think, there's been a lot of criticism of her. I do think that she's someone that has really adjusted nicely in the last like 11 games of the season. Before the Olympic break, I got to stop saying that. they just have to get back to the free throw line, because that's honestly how playoff games are won, just being able to get teams into foul trouble. And, the game slows down in the playoffs a little bit, you know, and just being able to settle into your half court offense a little bit more and attacking the rim is just going to be so important for this team, especially when they face Seattle and Las Vegas. And I think the other thing too is that they kind of need to find it a little bit more from beyond the arc.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's been kind of crazy. Like when you think about how this team is constructed, I mean, and Ali Quigley shooting over 40% from 3-point range this year, but just looking around, like Slooney has kind of dropped off a little bit from 3-point range in the last few games, where you would like to see a little bit more from her, even though, again, she's the point goddess and she's someone that it's hard to critique her game by any means. But you kind of think that they need a little bit more 3-point shooting outside of Allie. And I honestly, Candace, too. Candace has looked really well, looked really good in the last few games. So have you noticed that as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody did, right? It was Allie Quigley is back on as the marquee three-point shooter that we all knew she was. But overall, the Sky weren't hitting it as well from three. Even Allie had those couple of games midway through the first part of the season where she couldn't get her three-point stroke going. And it felt like the entire team was kind of stuck in that same mode. So they had to figure out other ways to get Allie involved in the offense rather than curling off screens at the arc. She was maybe taking the ball down towards the free throw line and taking jump shots from the elbow. You know, she's a born shooter. She's going to hit that shot. But from an analytics perspective, that's where you're settling for 2 points rather than three. And three-point shooting is something, an area where the Sky have excelled in the James Wade era. So that's something that they definitely need to improve upon to have a chance to move up in the standings.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time analyzing the last five games of the season for any team in the WNBA. The Indiana Fever, for Christ's sake, went on a three-game winning streak, and that's not a team. Look, that was not a real streak. I'm sorry to anyone who believes otherwise. I think that if you look at this team, everybody was just kind of limping to the finish line. And I mean, they shot 32.7% from deep in the last five games of before the Olympic break. So I don't know how much of that is going to be like a trend for the Sky, or if this, again, they just kind of needed the Olympic break to kind of reset. And a lot of people, I think there are a lot of people who think that a lot of these teams are going to, again, hit that reset button once, now that they've had some breathing room a little bit here. So it's going to be interesting, man. We got 12 games left. We're going to be at one of them. I'm really interested to see how the Chicago Sky end up here before the playoffs, because they have some really intriguing matchups that you all should be. I know you all are watching them, so it's going to be really, I'm super excited for it. This is going to be a really fun stretch for this team now that they're fully healthy. I mean, actually, one thing I should mention, too, is that Asrae Stevens is – I asked her about this yesterday, just how she's doing physically, and she said that she's still not exactly where she wants to be, but that she will be a full go against the Aces. I guess when this comes out on tomorrow, she'll be ready to go against the Aces on Sunday. So
excellent.
Outside of that injury, I mean, they get concerned. Maybe, honestly, who knows if it's really a concern at this point. And she'll be – really needed against those really difficult front courts that against Brianna Stewart, Ezzy, and then you have Liz, Derica, and Asia, Jesus. And so, I mean, it's going to be important to have Asrae back. I think we'll see more of her in the second half than we did in the first half, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where this team ends up. We didn't talk about this, Chris, but I'm just going to throw it at you. Do you have like a prediction where you, like, how far this guy will go?
No, not at this moment.
Same.
Sorry, everybody. Y'all are going to, you know what? Shout out to TickPick before we close, because we're going to get so – I hope that people take advantage of that, especially a way to get tickets for sporting events without going through the known channels like Ticketmaster and StubHub and the other guys. I looked into TickPick. They're a quality organization and company. They've been around since 2011, so it's not just something that's come out of left field. And for them to partner with us is great for us and great for them. So I hope that you all take advantage and utilize them. But I hope that we also get more listeners who hear me not making predictions, solidly always just like holding on to the fact that I'm going to wait and see. Cautious Chris on the Skyhook podcast.
CC.
So no, I don't have any predictions yet. I want to see how they play against Seattle. With the way that the Storm just knocked it out of the park yesterday. Yeah. It is, you know, the Sky are going to be underdogs, but they've had a chance to see, you know, how Seattle's come back off of the long layoff, and they can prepare for that. They have some time to prepare. So you want to see them have a good showing, even if they're most likely fated to lose. You want to see them lose by less, you know, single digits. You want to see them hold a lead in the third and in the fourth quarter. You want to see them do the things that we talked about, get off to a good shooting night, have the bench come in and provide solid minutes. You want to see them execute, even if it doesn't come out in their favor.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking for.
Definitely. And Yeah, definitely take advantage of Tick Pick when you get a chance. Again, we'll have more information coming out about that too, probably next week, if I want to say. But yeah, we're very excited to be partnered with them for the rest of the season. Chris, it's time for us to enjoy the rest of our Friday night. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
Welcome back, people.
Hell yes, my friend. We're back. We're finally back. It felt like we've been gone for 6 months. I'm glad it's only been a month. So we're excited to be back here. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. If you want to contact us, and maybe you will after this Tick Pick news, you can email our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time, that is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. And you can always follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @skyhookin. That is SKYHOOKIN. Chris, where can the lovely people of the Skyhook find you on the Twitter?
You already know it's @QuandaryKitten, @KWANDARY Kitten on Twitter. Just visit us there. As my bio says, I'm a very gregarious person who likes being alone. So Twitter is where we can talk. And you can call me cowardly for not making any predictions. So come on, talk to us. We love Chris, the conversation.
You are smart for not just being a fucking Skip Bayless and turning out takes that you don't actually mean. We all appreciate it. Hey, but you can also find me on Twitter as well. My handle is just James_M_KAY. Again, thank you so much for listening to our show. Please rate and review it when you get a chance because it helps us out. And yeah, until next time, my friends.